Review with Judge Carson. This is tape 29, side 2. Well, in a more reflective moment here, what do you see as basically today's problems in society? You have to deal with so many problems being a judge, and you've undoubtedly had time to reflect on the way our society is organized and the ills that it's dealing with.
Well, I hesitate to vent fully, or I will overtake Governor Attia and his hours. I have reflected upon it a lot. I think the number one problem is the destruction of the family, or the not totally, but substantially, because the family used to fill a lot of niches for a lot of us as we were growing up, as our counselors, as our moral enforcers, as our law enforcement, as our providers. And the way families are deteriorating around the country, many, not all, but many, they no longer are nurturing, they no longer are educators, no longer counselors, no longer disciplinarians, no longer providers, no longer the kinds of things that are important. In some areas, the state and the churches have lost their significance that they had for many years. Some very, many very, very good and doing an awful lot, but schools have been asked to do too much, and they've been asked to solve all the problems of the pick up the slack and the failure of families and the failure of churches and the failure of communities, and they failed. And courts, as we talked about, are not a very good substitute for those, as Susan Graver, you quoted Susan Graver saying, and she's right. So I think that's probably my observation. My lament is that every child couldn't have had a childhood like I have had, and I hope that we were able to give our children, I'm not sure they had a good time as I did. I had a very good time as a child. Very instructive, very good guidance, discipline, but nurturing. And I would wish that every child on the globe could have that kind of upbringing. It makes life more meaningful. I don't need government to tell me what to do. I can discover the right and wrong normally on my own, without laws or without uniforms or jails or whatever. And I think that until we can overturn the direction we're going, it's going to get worse. Violence now is... Governor Hatfield, Senator Hatfield, had an interesting piece 3 or 4 years ago. I'm paraphrasing it. He said in 1992 or whenever it came out, the biggest problems in crime in schools were drugs, weapons, and assaulting teachers. In 1962 or 52, the greatest problems were running in the hall, chewing gum, and talking in class. And that is true. That's how far we've come as a society, where the biggest, where you get in the most trouble when I was going to school is passing notes, talking, running in the hall, and chewing gum. And now they're nailing them for carrying firearms and for drug transactions and for punching out teachers. I mean, that's just how far we've disintegrated as a society.
And why do you think we've disintegrated?
There are many reasons, I suppose. Part of it is we've lost a shared vision of where we want to be. I'm just constantly irritated by when they interview young people and they lament the fact that things are really bad now. They don't have the opportunity their parents had. And that's just baloney. They had 10 times the opportunity their parents had. Kids today. And they have more comforts than their parents had, and or their grandparents had. And they have more free time, and they have more opportunity. But they're around wringing their hands, some of them, saying, oh, well, we've used up the environment, used everything. Woe is us. You've just destroyed the globe. And the answer is, we're doing it. We are destroying it. But it's more self-centered. Entitlements. I have a whole speech I could talk about the doctrine of entitlement, and you can see it played out in Medicare, where a reduction of the increase becomes a cut. That's what the fight is about, as you know.
Right.
It's not a cut. It's whether it's 7% or 10% mm-hmm. increase. But mm-hmm. that's how the game is played now, is if you don't get as much as you're entitled. Who said they're entitled? And Rush Limbaugh has a whole piece on entitlements and mm-hmm. Medicare and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm not bouncing on Medicare, but it's happened. The law has taken, should take some lumps on this, that what used to be a wish becomes a want, becomes a need, becomes a right, and or entitlement. And then you go do battle, you shoot for it, or hopefully you go to court, which is better than shooting for it too. When I was growing up, if the lawnmower broke after 8 years, I wore it out. Now it's a defective product, so I'm going to sue for a defective product. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy. And we're not very self-reliant anymore. And it would be hard in today's society to be able to, to repair your furnace, your automobile, and your computer. That takes a lot of skills. But we expect others to do things for us. And so I think basically that people are just growing up, they're not being raised anymore. And that's bearing bitter fruit. And it'll continue to do so because they tend to continue to procreate at ever-increasing numbers. It's geometric, as we talked about earlier. And it's going to get worse until society has a vision that things can be okay. And we're going to have to get a hold of ourselves, calm down, and focus on the kids. And work on them and maybe write off my generation, which is probably the last generation that knew that things could be bad, but could get better if you worked at it. Raised in the Depression. I was born in 34. I didn't know there was depression, historically I was in the Depression. But I didn't know any better. And I thought I had a pretty good life until I read how bad it was for many people. But my generation is probably the last one that takes with a grain of salt all this hand-wringing that's going on by the baby boomers and the other generations. You know, if you want to see bad, we can tell you about bad. And lost opportunity and lack of opportunity and lack of nurturing, we can tell you about that. Did that destroy the families? Absolutely not. And some it did, sure. But now we're pleasure seekers. We want authority with no responsibility. We want opportunity with no risk or no price. It ain't the way the world turns. And I'm very worried that everybody's talking about, not everybody, but many people who are much smarter than I are aware of this, but we really do have to focus on the children and correct it there and maybe write off the intervening generations, say it's going to be hard. You guys are going to have a hard time. You're not going to be able to have the fancy cars that you want and have the fancy houses. It's going to be a little tough, but we're doing it for the kids. Or we could continue to watch the boob tube and all the violence that's on there and take violence as a matter. Of course, it was interesting. I read an article. It was in Joseph Michelson and Michelson's, I guess that's his name, Institute of Ethics. Maybe I think it's Michelson. Anyway, it was a collection of pieces, and one person wrote, and I was generally familiar with this, about the code of the street. Now, I'm familiar with the Kahn's code and this, but this would be primarily the black code, the street, and dissing somebody, mm-hmm. and the language and the attitude, and it is a culture now that is very violent, and violence is a defense. It's really scary. I don't know that it's true, but the article is very well written, and I think written by somebody that knew what she was writing about, but how the young men are getting caught up in it, and now young women. And it's not necessary. It's kind of the gang development. And it's really scary, but violence is the code. That's how you protect yourself. Hit them first. And act tough. You know, we had a lot of that when I was in school, but nothing like today. It's just somebody carrying a gun in those days would be locked up until he was eligible for Social Security.
What is the catalyst for instilling a vision in a whole generation or in society in general?
Well, one is collapse, economic collapse, mm-hmm. Medical disease collapse, catastrophe, much like alcoholism. There are some people that can be helped out before they go all the way to the bottom and wind up on the curb, although the stuff I've read about it is many, if not most, have to crash. Their lives have to be literally destroyed, their relationships destroyed before they're willing to turn around and come back up.
If this happens on a society level.
Oh, it's a disaster. Well, and of course, our friends around the globe wouldn't wait too long to take over, but that would be one. You say a catalyst, catastrophe would be. And economic is, it used to be, I've always thought that we would be destroyed by our economic practices rather than overcome by some military. I did not predict with great regularity that Russia, USSR would collapse. Although when I was in the Guard, we had a plan, four scenarios in our future planning. And one of them was, I had Fortress America, which I thought that my team developed the plan for the Air National Guard and Fortress America. What we would need in terms of assets, manpower, resources for 1920s, isolationism, America first, everybody else go to blazes. I thought that was more likely to happen than the bipolar, which we had, and then the multipolar, where China and India and others, the nuclear nations, would come up, and there'd not just be USSR, but there'd be a multitude, a handful of world powers. The fourth one was the sole power, us. Russia would go away, USSR would go away. And we gamed that out. That wasn't my team's responsibility, but we had a plan for that, and of course, ultimately came to pass. Met with two Russians the day before yesterday who are what I would call state police in a state that's above Mongolia, and they're just destroyed by alcoholism. That's been a problem in USSR for a long time. All ages, kids, elderly people, big alcohol problems. Their economy has just gone to hell. Their crime has gone up. They are aping America, you know, and the whole thing. They got some real problems, and it'd be sad because many of the people's view of democracy is now being tainted by, if this is democracy, I'd rather have communism. It was bad under communism, but at least we had bread and vodka and grain, and now we got democracy, and we still have vodka, but we don't have bread and, you know, this sort of stuff. So I'm wondering, but catastrophe can always be a catalyst or near catastrophe, and that would be sad. That no one would want that on this country, or anybody for that matter. My hope would be is that we as community can come together and decide we are going to save the kids and put our resources in prenatal care, nutrition, education. Newt Gingrich got a lot of approbation when he suggested orphanages. I never thought I would say that, but there are people out there who have children who ought not to have children, ought not to be around children. It leaves you limited alternatives if you're going to save those children. And I realize how ominous that sounds, that Carson and his government are going to go out there and see who are good parents and this stuff. I don't mean to go that far. I don't have to go that far. We could identify hundreds of children in the state that are victims of continuing sexual assault, physical assault, and mental assault. They're easily identifiable. The school districts know who they are. The police know who they are. We're trying, but we're not getting it, and we're just going to have to. Goldschmidt had, I had an idea that the Chinese have a year of the snake, year of the dog, year of the parrot, or whatever it is, and they focus on this. And I thought that maybe we ought to have the decade of the child. And Goldschmidt did it. Remember, he had Governor Goldschmidt was on the right track. He had something was focusing on the children, but it, mm-hmm. we revamp all our government and say our number one focus, whether it's parks, whether it's highways, whether it's education, whether it's judiciary, whether it's the legislature, whatever it is save the kids. And that's what we talk about first before we start talking about where I'm going to get my RV parked or how many parking spaces I'm going to have around the courthouse. We're going to talk about kids. And just say, the rest of this stuff don't matter. And it doesn't, really, in the big picture. You know, we need to do it. And I think we have the capacity to do it. But we need the leadership from people who have credibility and who have an insight and can marshal. And number one, make people feel good about what they're doing. Because optimists work a lot better than mm-hmm. cynics and mm-hmm. depressed people. You don't get much work out of a cynic. He sees no future in it. And a pessimist says, it's all going to burn down anyway. Why should I help build it? And so, no, we have the potential, and there are enough people out there that care. But it's going to take a sea change. It's just we there's no catalyst in the future outside of disaster unless we refocus how the role of government, the role of churches, the role of families, the role of community. I'm not a particular fan of Mrs. Clinton, and I've not read her book, but there's a lot of truth that takes a community to raise a child. It does. Now, that'll offend a lot of conservatives that will say, I don't want no community raising my kid. And my answer is, you raise them so they're law-abiding and faithful. We won't mess with you. But you do that first, and if you don't, we'll come back at you and talk to you about how you're raising your kids. And you don't even have to get the margins. As I said, I'm not talking about whether you should switch a child. There were two willow trees, one in the front and one in the back. Hated those trees because my mother would go out and get a willow switch, and you don't know what it's like to be encouraged to do better. I always wore short pants in the summer, and damn, that stung. But it was for my good, and it was. I'm not saying that I was abused. I wasn't, clearly wasn't. So I'm not coming down that you can't shake a child. Got to be careful. You can do serious damage or willow switches or rulers or whatever. But I'm going far beyond that. I'm talking about hanging kids up on doors and punching them. I had a case like that. So I want to protect the freedoms of the families as much as I can, but I think we can come together as a nation and say, there's some things we're not going to tolerate. Domestic violence. Mm-hmm. I want to debate somebody, and they're out there, who believe it's absolutely okay for me to punch my wife out if she misbehaves. I want to debate that guy. I want to say, now tell me, what is your mindset? What are you following? And then ask for the audience to have show of hands. How many believe this man's mindset of how he deals with the public and his wife and his family is the correct one and should go unpunished, should go rewarded and continue and procreate more children that learn that kind of activity? That would be fun.
It might be frightening.
It would be scary because the guy's probably armed. No, I'm serious. Yeah. He probably is. Yeah. And if he's willing to punch out his own family, a woman, what do you think do to me? That's an easy choice.
Well, going on the other side then, as far as when you look back over your life, what has been your most satisfying achievement and what has been most satisfying to you?
Oh, I think my marriage. We've been through an awful lot, and I couldn't have gotten even through. I got through undergraduate school, sort of, without her. But then I got through flight school. I know I never would have gotten through flight school if she was going to finish at Willamette, and I was going to go ahead and get through pilot training, and then we were going to get married, and we decided to get married right after I graduated. And I never would have made it through pilot training. What that would have done if I'd not gone to the Air Force and all this sort of stuff, I know I wouldn't have been a fighter pilot. I wouldn't have been a general. That's easy to predict. But law school, we had a lot of fun, but being able to go back and disconnect and go and live in my own private world with a very loving wife and family was a real release. So that's probably right up there with being born into the right two parents, which I had nothing to do with. The marriage, I'll take some credit for. In family, and then the good fortune I've had with dealing with, I've really been blessed dealing with, there aren't many, I'm not quite a Will Rogers. I have met people I don't like, but not many. And most of the people I deal with have been really fun people. So I guess it would, and then, you know, I'm age 62, still looking for permanent work. I thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun to go to a group and say, how many of you guys are fighter pilots? How many of you are generals? How many have served in the legislature? How many have been a trial court judge? How many have been in the Supreme Court? How many have been in Chief Justice? And see how many people have had that opportunity. And that's fulfilling to me, that I could survive. I won't say do well necessarily. I think I have, but survive in so many different careers and leadership opportunities. And I credit that to my ability to work with people. None of it would have happened without some ability to work with people and have them work with me, because you don't do any of those things all by yourself, in my view. So that's been rewarding.
Well, we've covered a lot of territory.
Worked yourself out of a job.
and it's been very, very rewarding to me to be able to hear the story of your life.
Well, thank you. It's been kind of fun for me. I didn't realize it took so long to tell it.
Is there anything else you'd like to add? Are there other things you'd like to talk about?
No. I think I've exhausted you and exhausted my list of things that I would say this, however, if there, as a result of this, if there's any area that you or anybody at the Historical Society would like me to research. I didn't do, as we talked about earlier, much research, so I have not spent a lot of time trying to prepare on what I want to get into the record. Maybe I should have, but that's just not the way I'm built. But I'm available as a resource for anybody, or anybody else to follow up, and have a very high regard for Chet and the work he's doing, and your board, and and Tom Vaughn is, they only created one Tom Vaughn, and thank God, I don't know that I could, he was so funny, he's the dearest man, I just love him, and I could stand or sit and listen to for years and years and years. Jason Bowe used to do one of the best imitations of Tom Vaughn, and it was absolutely Jason, this is Tom. And it goes on and on. It was just wonderful. Spellbinder. Oh, Tom was wonderful. Is wonderful. But I'm here, and there's a lot of history, as you've noted, about Salem and the practice of law and the Oregon State Bar and court system and the legislature and stuff. And I'm just kind of passing through, and things have been handed to me, and I hold on, pass them on. But to the extent I can be any kind of a resource for you or people who care about that kind of stuff, just let me know and I'll try to comply.
Well, I appreciate that.
Comply.
And certainly if we have more things that come up in the course of this project
sure.
that we might want to talk to you about.
Now, are you going to transcribe this? Did I hear that?
Yes,
or, okay.
We plan on eventually transcribing it.
Okay.
But I really appreciate the time you've taken. I know that, you know, being a sitting Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, you don't have much time, and you've given a lot of time to this, almost 30 hours.
Yeah.
And
half as much as Picatia.
Well.
Which surprises me, because he's had a wonderful contribution to the state in so many areas.
Yes.
But this has been it's been interesting to reflect on it. I've often thought, am I practicing for what I'm going to be telling St. Peter when we get together? And he'll say, what have you done in your life? I doubt that he would sit still for 30 hours of self-aggrandizement, but It's been very interesting. And I would like, one of the things I'd like to have out of it, if I may, is either the tapes or the transcript or whatever is comfortable for my daughter. I'm sure she knows all this, but she is the only one in the family that has started to connect to ancestors and roots, and she remembers all of the intervening part, but she may not know a lot of it. So to the extent that it's of any value to her, it becomes quite precious to me. And so if that's possible, I can't see her listening to 30 hours of tape, but she's pretty disciplined herself, and if she thought it would be helpful to her children, she'd do it.
Well, I'm sure it'll be entertaining for people to read and useful for people to read, especially in the future for future projects for people that are interested in the law.
Mm-hmm.
And in you personally. So,
well, they got it straight out. I'm a little more forthcoming than some might be, but that's one of the advantages of being old. I'm always told that you're not as careful as you used to be when you're young.
Well, thank you very much for
my pleasure. Thank you.